Question. Thank you. You know, a lot of people know that we are federally unrecognized, and they think that that means because we're not Indian enough, we're not true Indians. But our tribe signed a treaty with the federal government in 1851. That right there was the California Indian Treaties, and many California Indian tribes signed that treaty in 1851. And that right there was to relocate the Indians to 18 different reservations, north to south in the central parts of California. After the treaties were signed, they were then signed by the treaty commissioners and sent to Washington, D.C. to be ratified. California did not want those treaties. They did not want reservations. California had said earlier that they wanted extermination of California Indians. And so they passed a resolution asking the federal government to not ratify the treaties. And they sent a delegation to Washington, D.C., asking them to not ratify the treaties. With that, the President of the United States then ordered that those treaties be sealed for 50 years. And as a result of that, those treaties were never ratified. So that's why we're not recognized today. They developed a process for being recognized, but it's a nearly impossible criteria to meet. Only one California tribe has successfully gone through that process, and that was in 1984. In nearly 40 years, no other tribe has been recognized. The federal government does not want any more tribes. It may be that someday we'll be federally recognized, but we cannot live just for that today. You know, we have to fulfill our obligation to Creator, to take care of Mother Earth and all living things. And that's why we work so hard on our land trust.
To close out, how can people get involved? If somebody's listening to this, they want to help, they want to support, they want to show their solidarity, not only the fight to save your stock, but you mentioned the land trust, like maybe volunteering or getting involved in other ways.
Well, we have three websites that provide a lot of information in different areas. First of all, amamutsen.org website gives a lot of information on the history of the Amamutsen and who we are and our experiences during those three periods of colonization and where we are today. And then we have the Amamutsen Land Trust, amamutsenlandtrust.org. And that amamutsenlandtrust.org talks about our land trust and our ways of traditional stewardship of the land. For example, the use of fires, the way that we would collect shellfish, the way that we would take care of native plants and the importance of native plants. The way that we stewarded the rivers and had ceremonies for salmon, and how we maintained the land as being Mother Earth as being sacred. And then finally, for Eurostock, we have a website very specific to Eurostock. It's at protecteurostock.org. And Eurostock is spelled Juristac. So if people wanted to learn about Eurostock and how to get involved, you can go there.
That again was Robert Raymond interviewing Valentine Lopez about the battle over the indigenous sacred site called Eurostock. And that actually does it for today's show. If you'd like to know more information about today's show, please visit us online at www.radioproject.org. I'm Salima Hamrani. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're in our annual fall membership drive. You can help us meet our $55,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution today. All donations will be matched up to $14,000 thanks to a generous group of anonymous donors. KBOO's independent programming is only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon, Both Rachel and I are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Angela Bonilla and Jackie Dixon. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, really excited to have you here today. So you've been on before, but I'm sure we have listeners that aren't real familiar with you. So can you just start by telling us about your teaching background and experience?
Hi, Jackie Dixon here. I've been a teacher in Portland Public since 2005. Language arts and English as a second language or English language development in high school mostly. So most recently, before I was elected in this position, I worked in the DART program with youth that are in day and residential treatment. And before that, spent some time at Roosevelt High School.
Great.
Happy to be here.
Hi, Angela Bonilla, she, they, ella pronouns. I am usually a Spanish immersion elementary educator, mostly fourth grade Spanish immersion. I have been working at Portland Public Schools as an education assistant and then a teacher since 2014, and mostly worked at Rigler Elementary, Scott Elementary. I did a year at Chavez, K-8. And my most recent positions were as instructional coach, was as an instructional coach at Scott Elementary.
Gotcha. Thanks for that. And we have you on because, for our listeners that don't know, Angela is the president and Jackie is the vice president for Portland Association of Teachers, which we will from now on in this show call PAT, Portland Association of Teachers, which if you're wondering what is an association, it's a lesser word that I'm not real fond of, but it's another word for union. So there you go. So PAT and PPS management are currently in contract negotiations. Tell us about when they began and where you're at now in that whole timeline of bargaining.
Absolutely. So we are in, we've been bargaining forever, it feels like. I've only been president for about 450 days, and we've been bargaining about 340 of those days. The first started last October, where we started a conversation around student discipline. And how we can change our language to ensure that students are getting the support that they need. That did not lead to a settlement. And so we started our full bargain January 10th of 2023. And so we are currently at the point in our timeline where we have declared an impasse, which means that we don't see ourselves finding a resolution despite support from a state mediator. And so we are in our 30-day cooling down period. And what that means is that we're still bargaining. We're still talking with the district. We're still using a mediator. But after these 30 days, either the union can call for a strike and give a 10-day notice, or the district can decide to impose their final offer and say, this is what you get, and you don't throw a fit. And they give us about 7 days warning for that. So we are about a week and a half into our 30-day cooling down period.
Gotcha. And that 30 days, does that include weekends or is that just work days? What is that?
It's calendar days.
Calendar days. Okay, thanks. So tell us about some of the issues. I know there are quite a few that you are interested in working on improving or changing. Tell us about some of the key issues that educators have raised about teaching in PPS.
Well, I think safety has been a hot topic, maybe not in the traditional sense as we think of safety, but like building safety. Like, are our buildings reasonable temperatures that students can learn in and educators can teach in? So like we're fighting for buildings that are between 60 and 90 degrees and rodent free, for example. Other things that are pressing issues for us would be like planning time and class size. So as an English teacher, for example, if I have like 170 students, right, you could only imagine how long that takes to grade an essay when you have 170 students. And currently, when you compare our planning time in Portland Public Schools compared to the top Metro 14 schools in the Portland area, we rank really low, like at the bottom of the list. So we're asking for reasonable planning time so that our educators can do the job they need to do to serve our students best and students can get adequate attention. And class size is a similar concern, right? Like if you have 30 students in your class, it's impossible to give students the attention they really deserve. So we feel like those asks are very reasonable, and we just want to kind of stay competitive also with surrounding districts so we can recruit and retain high quality educators. Anything else you want to add to that, Angela?
Yeah, one of our bargaining team members mentioned this last night, and I think it's also really important to lift up. You know, we choose this profession because we care about students and families and our communities and what supports the humans that are going to live in our society get as they're developing. But as workers, we work for money, right? And so we cannot continue to do this work without a cost of living adjustment that actually is comparable to inflation. As educators, national studies already show that we make, in Oregon at least, 28.5% less than others with the same level of education. So education is already an undervalued profession, and we make less than others with our same amount of student debt, is how I think about it. But in addition to that, our wages haven't kept up and kept pace with inflation. So the cost of living adjustment that we're asking for would help us catch up and keep up with the rest of the other 13 districts in our metro area, and the salaries that they provide for their educators, because we have to, as Jackie said, keep and, you know, attract high quality educators. And the reality is, you know, the percentage offered by the district is not going to pay the rent, right? And it's not going to make sure that folks stay in one of the, in the second least affordable city in the country for first year educators trying to rent a one bedroom apartment. Like, there is a cost of living adjustment that needs to happen in order for us to be able to stay in our communities with our families.
Before the pandemic, OEA published a report about the mental health crisis in our schools. So we know that this is nothing new. And the federal government gave money to school districts, which could be used to address mental and social emotional needs. So what is the current landscape in schools and PPS? Are there more support for students? Did we see an increase from that funding?
I can't speak to why the increase came, except for knowing that a lot of the funding that the district has received, and most districts in our state received, came from the Student Success Act, which educators and families and communities came out to support and fight for in 2019. And so I know that at my school, we saw a addition of a half-time social worker and other supports in our building. I think the COVID and federal relief funds provided more so that our social worker became full-time. But the mental and social emotional needs in our buildings are still very high. One thing we've seen, because we've been bargaining with the district throughout COVID for safety, they gave us a bunch of really startling facts around how many suicide screenings we're doing. And this is across K-12, not just our middle and high schools, but our elementary school students too. We know, according to ODE, we have at least about 6,700 students who are considered mobile, which means that they are not registering at the same school throughout the year. They're registering at a different school at some point during the year or being dropped from rosters. So that's a way to indicate that students are experiencing housing insecurity. And we're also seeing upticks in behavior that are leading to, you know, news reports. We've seen what's happened at Roseway. We've seen what's happened at West Sylvan. We've seen all these violent incidents. And studies are showing that kids are really struggling. They were struggling before pandemic closures and are struggling more afterwards.
And can you tell us, it seems like you touched on this with your talking about, you know, issues outside of the building, but can you tell us more about bargaining for the common good, what that is and what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we talk about bargaining for the common good, we're talking about community schools and schools that help address like not necessarily traditional educational goals only, but really the needs of the community. So some examples of bargaining for the common good type proposals that we've seen across the nation are things as simple as like providing laundry services for students at schools. We're proposing what's considered like a resiliency fund for parents in need of housing support, like at the local school level, which would also include more autonomy or I guess control of those funds by parents in those schools to distribute to families in need at that school to help keep students in that school if they're having a housing crisis or like a temporary or transitional living situation. Other examples would be that increase in mental health supports and wraparound student services. Angela, do you want to talk about any of our specific bargaining for the common good proposals?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, Jackie, you were right on. A lot of these issues we're asking for are not necessarily higher costs. They're more of an investment and access piece, right? So laundry services, many of us already have washers and dryers in our schools. If we have clothing closets, we want houseless students to have access to that after school, right? For the housing piece, one question that keeps coming up is like, why are we fighting for housing? Like, that's not traditionally what students, you know, you do in a public school. And why are you trying to get the district to build affordable housing when that's not the ask, right? Our district mandated proposal, which is us, the only things that the district has to talk to us legally about. In that proposal, we've only asked for a housing stipend. Like I said earlier, Portland has a skyrocketing cost of living in the city, and educators are really struggling. And so we thought, you know, a one-time yearly stipend would help. But in our student-centered proposal, which is the proposal that has all the subjects the district doesn't have to talk to us about, but we would love for them to engage in, because it really is how we push forward the mission of our schools, we're asking for the district to help increase resiliency funds. So as Jackie pointed out, there are already PTAs who do this work. They just fundraise individually. And we're worried about the way that that can disproportionately impact certain communities. So we want the district to invest in those resiliency funds. And the goal of those funds are to ensure that kids stay at their neighborhood school and that they can stay in their neighborhood home. And if they can't, they can stay housed. And so it is just a way to get cash directly to families in a community that maintains the community, which in turn helps stabilize our enrollment, which is a big concern of the district, decreasing enrollment because of the livability. But we know that communities have always and will continue to support each other. We're just asking the district to invest as much in the communities as they are investing in each other.
Great. Well, listeners, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. Also, we are in the middle of our fall membership drive. And so just a plug for that, KBOO does not take corporate money for advertising. We rely on you, our listeners, for sustaining us financially. So if you're not already a member, please go to kboo.fm/give to donate. So you've been talking about some of the issues that you're bargaining over, and it sounds like the district is not real agreeable to. Are there any issues that you are in agreement on, that you have reached some kind of agreement on?
Yeah, we actually have already tentatively agreed on 10 different articles within this bargain. So there is movement being made. Three of those at least happened after we asked for state mediation. So that's a big part of what we're working towards, is making sure that we're using the timelines to put pressure on the district to actually act. Because in the past, the district has taken up to 2 years to help settle a 2-year contract with us. And so we can't afford to wait. Our kids can't wait. Our educators can't wait. Some of the issues in which we are under, I think we're under, we are in agreement in theory, right? But theory is not, a contract does not make, right? And so the issue is really thinking about what are the logistics of creating a system of education that can actually do the things we promise to do, right? We know education is the great equalizer. We know education and schools are where families go when they need something. We're often the first ones to find ways to get people social services. We're that first contact with society for most folks once their kids turn 5. We need to take that responsibility seriously and have the resources our families need available. So we're still very, very far apart on a lot of issues, but in agreement when it comes to the theory of, you know, wanting to help kids. I think that's where we're at.
Yes, we hear the same kinds of responses from politicians as well, right? Oh, we would love to do all these things, but we just can't. So talk about some of the main sticking points, or maybe some of the excuses or the propaganda that you're hearing as in terms of why the district cannot possibly do some of these outrageous things that you are asking for.
Well, I would love to address class size. So I think, you know, the district has shared numbers widely, publicly, talking about average class size that makes it look like all PPS students are really getting what they need. And, you know, if you have basic math, you know, an average is an average. It's not what you're seeing in every class. So they've said things like, well, 75% of classrooms in PPS are meeting this threshold of, Angela, you might have to help me out with the numbers, but I think 25 for elementary.
Yeah, so they're talking about K-5 classrooms. I think it's 830-something classrooms. 75% of those have an average of 25 students per class.
So if they were to actually make all elementary classrooms that level, right, and 25 students or less, they claim that that's going to cost too much money. They don't have the money. Yet we know 75% is a pretty high percentage. So the math ain't mathin. It's kind of confusing to the public. And I think we've heard that from parents and communities as well. Like, well, if your average class size is actually this low, then it's not a huge ask to ask to make all classes a reasonable size so that students are really getting the attention that they deserve from their teachers. And quite frankly, so that special education students are getting the federally mandated services that their individual education plans call for. We know that's been a huge concern in PPS for a long time. And so we would really like to address that with lower class sizes. In addition to the class sizes, planning time is another sticking point. I think it's clear when you look at Beaverton or North Clackamas that PPS educators, PAT educators are getting the short end of the stick. We're not even comparable in planning time, which really creates these unlivable, like, we can't do it, right? These working conditions that drive people out, that people leave PPS because you don't want to spend your entire weekend planning for your classes and grading papers. You should be able to do that within your workday, and you should be compensated for that time. So teacher burnout is real. We've seen it from parents and community members that they have our back and they know how hard our teachers work. So we're not going to give up on those proposals. We're going to stand strong. And I think that that's like bare minimum that our educators really deserve, to have sustainable working conditions. As far as a cost of living increase as well, we know that's it's also bare minimum. Like, we have to be able to pay rent and mortgage. And if we want to attract new educators and high quality educators, they need to have a reasonable wage where they can afford to live in Portland. There was an article in Axios that addressed this and said Portland was like the number two unlivable place for brand new educators because of how low their income is and how high the cost of living here is. Angela, anything else you want to add? Sticking points?
Yeah, I think one of the major sticking points, and when talking to PTAs, we've had to really confront, is that we have, as educators who are actually on the ground, who live in the city, who have been here for years, a different vision of what our schools could be and should be than what we're seeing from management. And so the major sticking points are us saying, you know, I know that y'all are the largest district and you are also the most funded district in our state. Regardless of the underfunding by the state, why are several oversight committees, including the Secretary of State, our Community Budget Review Committee, calling out the fact that over the last 5 years, instructional staff have gone down 7%, but administrative staff have gone upwards of 20%, right? Like, why do we have less students, less staff, and more managers? So really, the argument here that the district gives us about we don't have enough money, we have to change all these, this direction, that it would be a huge lift to find the funds to do all these things. The reality is, we've been telling them for years, I've been telling them every school board meeting, we're going in the wrong direction. We need to change course. And the response I get is 45 minutes from leadership telling me in a meeting that they don't think it's that serious, and that why are you complaining? We've done so much work to support our students. Well, I'm on the ground and we don't feel it. So whatever's happening in your policies and in your meetings upstairs at the central air-conditioned office is different from what our kids and our families are experiencing on the ground. And it is time for us to pivot and decide that the funding should be going to the classrooms, not to better suits in central office. And that, I believe, is the main sticking point, is that we have a fundamentally different vision of how you make a district run. Because if those administrative positions were in payroll and benefits and in all these offices that actually support workers so that they can support students, that'd be one thing. But we're getting more and more people to be able to pass the buck around and say, well, I didn't make that decision, so-and-so made that decision. And that a functional district does not make.
We have very little time left, so I do want to ask one more question. But I also want to point out that I was shocked when I discovered how much more planning time Beaverton got. It's twice as much for elementary educators. And that blew my mind as a person with 30 fifth graders in my class and not enough time to even get to the next day prepared. That would just, I couldn't even imagine what a difference that would make in my life. So can you just in the last few minutes tell us about the support PAT is receiving from other unions, parents, and students, and just the public in general?
Yeah, I mean, we are seeing our families and communities and the public showing up for us. If you go to our website, pdxteachers.org, you'll be able to find our resources for allies page, our petitions for support on our vision. And we have overwhelming support. I mean, our community list has grown from a few hundred to a few thousand. We have been visiting. We've flyered at almost every brick and mortar site in the district, and that isn't being done by educators because we're at work. That's being done by community volunteers, folks who just see the state of our schools, who are grandparents, other workers in our city, who know that the way to prevent most of society's ills is by supporting our kids and supporting our education system. So we are seeing a groundswell of support, and we know that, you know, when we fight for what our community needs, we win. So we don't plan to stop fighting for what our communities and our educators and our students need, because we have no other option. We have to win, right, Jackie?
Absolutely. And I think the other thing we've seen from parents in multiple communities at PTA meetings and at listening sessions is that they're asking the right questions of district management. And so, you know, I think they see the rhetoric and they know that the person they trust and that they can really talk to is their child's teacher or their child's counselor, right? Like someone that actually works with their child on the ground in their neighborhood community school. They know that that's where they can get the real experience of what is actually happening in our classrooms. And so I'm really happy to say that when I've been in these forums with parents, I think they're asking the right questions and I think they should keep asking because the district owes it to families and they owe it to our children. They need the attention. They need a high quality education. And we may disagree on some things, but that's one thing we do agree on, I think.
Thank you so much. And just one last plug. There's a beautiful billboard of a gorgeous image. Can you just tell our listeners where that billboard is and if they want to take a selfie in front of that billboard and tag at PDX Teachers, it would be cool to see a bunch of photos.
Absolutely. So we had a billboard just go up on Northeast Broadway and Larrabee. It's close to the Moda Center and right up the block from PPS headquarters. You could see it right around the corner. And if you want to tag PDX Teachers on all social media platforms, we'd love to see our community's gorgeous photos.
All right. Thank you, Angela and Jackie, for joining us on KBOO. Thanks to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show. KBOO.
Baby, you understand me now.